Maybe now? Yeah, better. Okay. Right. Next to speaking naked, I think booting in front of a tech community is really embarrassing. Anyway, thanks for your patience. So, I'm Erik Josefsson. I work for Electronic Frontier Foundation. I'm since half a year, or since this year. So, I'm approaching my first year as European Affairs Coordinator. Can you hear me? Okay, it's the echo is quite loud here. So, I used to work with FFII. I still work in some projects together with FFII on IPRED2, for example. But my main experience and maybe contribution was the Software Patents Directive that was killed 2 years ago. Now, there are really, really many other things happening in Brussels than just software patents. And one of the things that I've been a bit involved in was the Data Retention Directive. And now, since a couple of weeks, I'm also trying to follow a new proposal to save PNR records, personal name records. I'm calling this the Brussels workshop because I hope there will be some questions at the end. I'm not a technical specialist. I'm not also not really completely up to speed on the whole package of this PNR proposal. But I have a small quote here from some anonymous Eurocrat, or that's the kind of the thing that you sometimes hear as a joke, that first we decide, and then we vote, and finally we discuss. And I think this, if this is, maybe this is not a joke, and therefore this is really serious. I think that the initiatives that comes from Brussels have not been, they don't originate in the, at least not in the way I think political initiatives should originate. I'm Swedish, so I think we have a political system that starts with a common understanding that something is wrong, and then you have a proposal, and then that enters into the political system and finally becomes law. But some things in current policy making is not going that path, and we have a completely different path. So, just as an example, the Data Retention Directive. This is a quote from a speech by Alexander Alvaro. He's a German MEP. He's from the Liberal Group, and he was the rapporteur for this directive. And this is a quote from a hearing the Greens arranged in the European Parliament. It was just 1 week before the vote of the European Parliament in December 2005. So he said, there is no impact assessment on what technical impact this will have. How much will this affect IP industry in general? We don't know. How much will it affect the interior market? We don't know. How much influence will it have on labor markets? We don't know. What will it cost to SMEs? We don't know. The rapporteur, Alvaro, he withdrew his name from the report a week later when this directive was passed in the European Parliament. The way it was passed was described by some parliamentarians like basically that the European Parliament had been raped. There was backstabbing and deals that were not transparent, and the whole process was really, really rushed. So the day after the vote, one of the MEPs that I had contact with against the Data Retention Directive asked the Commission if the Commission's extended impact assessment, if that was carried out in according with the Commission's own impact assessment guidelines. So the question is whether each proposal should, of course, have an impact assessment that you identify the problem and that you talk about the possible solutions and which solutions will impact what sectors of the society and if it will be efficient, etc. And the Commission actually has guidelines for how these impact assessments should be done, so that there's some kind of standard. And this MEP, she's Swedish, Charlotte Cederschiöld from EPP, the Conservative Group, asked whether they had done it according to their own rules. And the Commission answered, yes, of course. Everything has been elaborated in conformity with the guidelines on impact assessments. Yet the rapporteur had said that we don't know four times before the vote. So, did they really maybe decide before they had the discussion? It seems so, because this is a discussion items from an agenda that was passed, or the agenda for a meeting that the Commission invited to. There's in the Data Retention Directive, there's a recital 14 that defines a working group that is supposed to follow the implementation of this the directive in member states. It contains stakeholders like industry representatives, members from the European Parliament, the Commission, of course, and the European Data Protection Supervisor. And still, less than 1 month ago, the 30th of November, this was on the agenda. What is the role of internet transit providers? That's something else than internet service providers. What do we do with spam email? How does this directive apply to web mail services? How do we solve the problem with internet telephony? Cost recovery issues. Will this be paid by the customers of the telephone companies, or will the data retention be paid by the government or the government agencies? Not solved. Statistics. There was also a point called centralized data storage within the European Union. So there are ideas that we should have a centralized storage of data that will telecommunication data that is retained. And data protection and related issues. So 2 years after the adoption of the directive, there is still within the Recital 14 working group discussions about central, really difficult questions, and they don't know the answers. Now, so this is happening in Brussels. Now, Christoph will say a bit what will happen with this directive and the implementation in Germany in 2008. So, please.
Well, can you hear me?
Yes,
fine. Yeah, I'm Christoph from the German Working Group on Data Retention, based in Berlin, actually, here. We will file, a kind of class action complaint to the Constitutional Court within the next days. We have about, 30,000 signatories about this complaint, which is the largest complaint ever made in Germany. Thank you to all of you. It is really a very cool project. It has never been done before. The complaint contains about 120 pages. I don't know why Eric wants that in on the file. We will file this complaint in two steps. Within the next days, we will file the complaint in the name of four people, which will be Patrick Breyer, Dr. Patrick Breyer, the founder of the AKVorrat, Professor Gusi, Meinert Starostik, as far as I know, and Professor Rolf Gössner. And after that, the complaint will be accepted by the Constitutional Court, we will file the complaint of the other 29,996 complainers. This is just for technical reasons, because we have not finished hacking the data of the complainers into our database, our data retention database, however. Well, the class action lawsuit will lead to four possible outcomes. The first outcome could be the rejection. The Constitutional Court can say, well, we will not accept the complaint because it is about a European directive, it's not our business. The second possibility is that they will reject our urgent decree. We will file an urgent decree for stopping the law before it comes effective. They could reject that, but they could accept the complaint itself. The third possibility is they will accept both. If they do, then we do not have to deal with data retention anymore. The fourth possibility, which is the best in our opinion, is that they accept the urgent decree and the complaint itself, but do not work on it themselves, but send it to the European Court. In this case, we could have the chance to bring down the European directive as well as the German adoption. Okay, that's for the constitutional complaint, but I just want to take three or four notes about our recent work or the future work. Here at the Congress, we will hold two more workshops. The first is today at 18:30, Resistance Isn't Futile. We will talk about building up a civil society movement in Germany. The second workshop is on Sunday, 12:45, about building an international civil society. So I would kindly request all representatives of European and international NGOs, civil society movements, activists, to join that workshop, to get together and talk about strategies. Due to the constitutional complaint, we plan to hold a press conference on Saturday, which is tomorrow, just for information, if any press is here. We will make a demonstration in Hamburg on December the 31st. Please join the demonstration if you are from Hamburg. We will make a demonstration on January the 6th in Munich. Please join the demonstration in Munich if you are from Bavaria. But then there's one very important step. We will do a kind of strategy congress during February, February the 8th to February the 10th. It's a weekend in Kassel in Germany. We will invite every NGO and civil society activists, groups and movements to join the congress to talk about strategies, building, well, a kind of civil society movement, a larger civil society movement than we have already, and building strategies of getting into stakeholders groups, force the lobbying on the European level and the national levels, and, well, get better connected in the civil society. And, of course, another interesting goal will be the next large demonstration, throughout the year. I don't know, we have no concrete date on that. But I hope to see here in Germany about 50,000, 100,000 people. What about you? it depends on you. We need more help. We need activists and volunteers. There's a lot of work to do, a lot of interesting projects, but we lack of people. So please spare some hours of your time and join us. We have an informational desk at level B under the big Big Schäuble is watching you banner next to the FFII desk. Please come to our desk and talk to us. We have a lot of things to do, and we are very appreciated to hear about your ideas for campaigning. You can also ring us up through our DECT. It is 2584. that is the deck of our desk. We are there for your requests. Thank you very much.
So data retention in 2009 might not be any slide at all then, if you...
Yeah, you can cross it.
Yeah. So I would suspect that... talking about impact assessments, I think the Commission should have assessed the legality of the proposal before they pushed it through the Parliament. Okay. So next part of this presentation is about PNR, personal name records. It's just 1 month old, this proposal from the Commission to use passenger name records for law enforcement purposes. This is a proposal that its implications are, or possible implications are, so extreme, it's hard to take, hard to know where to start. Maybe I'll just start. So, since this is a CCC Congress, I guess most of you are technical people. So, just like with the data retention directive, you had a political ambition to create this for law enforcement purposes to save telecommunications data. And then the proposal contains a lot of language on what you should save and who should save things. But the technical reality is not as simple or doesn't really fit with the legal text. And I guess that is why they are still talking about what to do with different things like webmail and IP telephony. I think it's the same situation with the PNR proposal, that the understanding or the unwillingness to really understand what the PNRs are used for and how they are made or constructed or the purpose for which they were made, that understanding is limited, which means that the proposal lacks some basic checks with reality. So I'm just trying to list here, when you make a reservation to travel by plane from Berlin to Stockholm, for example, when you make the reservation, a PNR record is created. It's actually not created in... it depends on where you go, if you go to a travel agency or to an airline, or if you do it on the internet. But the PNR is created in most of the times in CRS, in a computerized reservation system. So these computerized reservation systems, they run on IBM mainframes. It's a very old and efficient, complex, and big global network. It's kind of a parallel to the internet. There are four major CRSs. That is Sabre, Amadeus, Galileo, and WorldSpan. It's only Amadeus that is European in the sense that it's located in Spain, I think, with a database in Erdingen in Germany. But they also run these IBM mainframes with that kind of old but still efficient technology. So the PNR contains everything, like, of course, your personal, your name and address and telephone numbers and your credit card information. But a lot of the information is also, this PNR record is also can be, information can be added by intermediaries, car rentals, travel agencies, tour operators. Like if you go, I want to go to Vienna for the Christmas concert, then I want to have a hotel and I want to have a car and maybe even I can go to the restaurant. And this can be arranged and booked by your travel agency, and most of this information might end up in your PNR. So the PNR record is a data set that's really flexible and versatile, and there are a lot of free text fields, and it's not really just a form where with name and address and passport number. So a PNR record can't be deleted either. So this is one of the things that kind of shows that the system was made. It's maybe 30 or 40 years old system that was never designed for either privacy in mind or retention in mind. And well, up until the mid-90s, the CRS network was probably larger than the internet. And I saw somewhere on Wikipedia that at some point in time, the mainframe capacity for these systems were the largest computing or the greatest computing power, civil computing power in the world. So we are talking about an old mainframe system. So when you make a booking from Berlin to Stockholm, then your PNR, if you fly with, for example, SAS, Swedish Airlines, Scandinavian Airlines are not using Sabre, but some other company I can't come up with a name right now. Anyway, the PNR is then created in the CRS. If it's this air company or travel agency uses Sabre, it is created in the database in the United States immediately. And that means that the travel agency or the airline has transferred personal data to a country with no data protection legislation in place. And what the Sabre does with this information, it's impossible to know. They can store it forever if they like, and they probably do. Anyway, in this PNR proposal from Frattini, there is supposed to be set up in each member state a passenger information unit and state agency that will have as its purpose and task to collect all the travel bookings that the airlines and travel agencies make in the country. So they will basically, to be able to do that, they will probably do like they already DHS does, the Department of Homeland Security. They will probably have root access to each of the airlines partitioned in the CRS. And this is one of the main reasons for conflict or argument when it comes to the PNR agreement between the European Union and the United States recently, that we don't know where our data goes, and still European companies are supposed to follow European privacy legislation. And not even the airlines in Europe can know what happens with their PNR record, because the system is so complex, and it also a PNR record created by one airline can be copied over to another that uses one CRS, can be copied over to another CRS system. So you will probably end up with having a copy of your travel in a US-based CRS anyway. So I've been working a bit with Edward Hasbrook on this project to on PNR, and he has asked for his personal RAIN records from the Department of Homeland Security in the United States, and the records he gets from the US contains information about flights between European cities that are not connected at all to the reservation that is related to the trip in the from the United States. So we have the CRSs and the PNRs are handled by the CRSs that we, in a way, we don't really know. And on the other hand, we have this political initiative to make a PNR system for Europe, where passenger information units will have access to all travel data. And they are then supposed to store this data for 13 years. Of course, in the proposal, there's particularly to make everybody happy and calm people down. It's mentioned that the race and things like religion and trade union membership is, of course, not to be saved. Shouldn't be kept. So there's a list of 19 items that should be saved by the this passenger information unit. And item 12 says that the field that is called general remarks should be saved, but it should, of course, exclude sensitive information like trade union membership. And also all historical changes to the PNR listed in numbers 1 to 18. That means that the change log to the PNR should also be saved. This means that if anybody has entered sensitive information in the change log, it will be in the change log, and it's not technically possible to say that you can actually be sure that, for example, trade union membership is not in your PNR record. So, all in all, just before Christmas, the European Data Protection Supervisor, Peter Hustings, came with an opinion about the PNR proposal, and it's 112 points or something, and it's the critique is huge. It contains so many errors, so I just choose one of them. Connecting back to the impact assessment argument, that if you build upon different databases without a global view on the concrete results and shortcomings, that is contrary to rational legislative policy, in which new instruments must not be adopted before those existing have been fully implemented and proved to be insufficient. This is a part of what I would say the preparation of legislative proposal. He says it hasn't been done properly, and it might otherwise lead to a move towards a total surveillance society. So this is the data protection supervisor, European data protection supervisor, really criticizing a proposal from the Commission. So what can we do with the proposal on the political level? The European Parliament will have an opinion on this proposal, and the rapporteurs, or the responsible rapporteur, will be Sophie Intveld from the Liberal Group, ALDE. She is from the Netherlands, and the LIBE is the Civil Liberties Committee. In the Foreign Affairs Committee, which is a shadow committee, they will have an opinion on this proposal, and the rapporteur is Jan Wiersma. He is from the Netherlands, and he is from the Socialist Group. And in the Transport Committee, it's Eva Lichtenberger from Austria. She's a European parliamentarian from the Greens. Now, this is a third pillar proposal, so these are only opinions. But I would say that there is a possibility that the European Parliament will be quite explicit in its opinions, since it actually doesn't have any power. So it can be bold about stating things like human rights and things like that. So, I have two pictures. This is one of Richelieu. He said, give me six lines written by the most honorable of men, and I will find an excuse in them to hang him. And I just wonder what the, when you have this critique from Hastings, the European Data Protection Supervisor, saying that this will, well, he mentions a total surveillance society. I wonder what Popper would have said. Actually, I think Popper would have said, as he always, well, as he did in his book, The Open Society and Its Enemies, how can we so organize political institutions that bad or incompetent rulers can be prevented from doing too much damage? So I would say that we really have to use the political institutions or try to talk to our politicians to make sure that this proposal doesn't make too much damage. And this is a picture I just found on the internet. Homeland Security Europe, we're succeeding together, and the picture is on Frattini. Right. Then I just have a proposal for you from, since you're maybe many of you are working with the DRM issues and looking at it on a technical level. There are proposals to talk about not only digital rights management but also personal rights management, PRM. And what is actually happening right now in the United States, this is from Edward Hasbrook's blog a couple of days ago, that from mid-February, the CRS systems, these booking systems, are being rebuilt, reprogrammed in a way that when you fly to the United States, just before you board, you will have an individualized permission from DHS to enter. This is basically changing the principle of that you're free to travel to that you must have a permission to travel. And this will then be implemented in the systems themselves. So Lessig's talk about code is law is very apt in this respect. And on the design level then, how would you implement something that the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights says that everyone shall be free to leave any country, including his own, and no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of the right to enter his own country. I don't know if the United States is a signatory to this convention, but I'm quite sure that Germany and most of the European Union members are. So that's an open question whether this proposal will, the PNR proposal will, be compliant with the ICCPR. So in the United States, I would say that EFF is working mostly with impact litigation and, of course, online activism. But the main method for working for political change for the civil liberty groups in the United States are actually litigation. So, like, for example, EFF is suing AT&T at the moment for handing over customer data to the US government without a warrant. And EFF in Europe, what I hope we can do is impact education. And I would urge the tech community here to look at the technical realities of the CRSs and how the PNR system, PNRs, where they are saved, how they are exchanged, what the technical reality looks like, so that we have, so that we can have an informed discussion about what this proposal really means. And we will hopefully soon launch a campaign where we will ask people to ask for their PNR records from the airlines when you go to the United States, or if you travel within Europe too, so that we can see what the system actually looks like and how it lives up to the privacy legislation we have in Europe and maybe also the human rights we should have, if we should follow. So, thank you very much. I would like to have some questions. So,
hi. Just maybe a stupid question, but why Frattini wants to store these PUI data for 13 years and not for 12 or for 14 years? Is there any reason for that?
Who's speaking? Oh, any reason for?
Yeah. Stand up. Sorry. The PIU Frattini wants to build up and stores the data for 13 years, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I don't know really the reason for the length of 13 years, and it's mentioned in Hastings or the European Data Protection Supervisor opinion that from the survey that the Commission sent out, the average proposal or the average time that was proposed from member state was 3.5 years. So the 13 years comes from, I don't know, probably some technical aspect of the systems that are being implemented in the United States. So that is also what this Hastings is mentioning, that the European PNR proposal is very, very similar to the US system. And what this is speculation, of course, but it could be that the current reprogramming for making the booking, well, when you that you must have a permission in real time from DHS before you enter the plane. It's quite a big change of the systems that this is now for international flights to the United States. That when this programming is done by these four big corporations, it will be easy to implement the same solution for domestic flights within the United States. And when that is done, since these are global systems, it will be quite easy to jack that solution into this European PNR proposal. So you could say that it's kind of the preparation to technically implement PRM, personal rights or travel rights management on a very fundamental technical level. It's also interesting that some countries propose that it should not only be air travel, but also boat and train tickets should also be stored for 13 years. And the reason why it's not included in the proposal is because the technique is not there yet. It's not for any other particular reason. So.
Hi, Eric. I have a question regarding SWIFT. We know that there's a similar situation. SWIFT is for financial data. When you do a financial transaction to the United States, it was a big debate in Parliament about the SWIFT data, and they also store it in US data centers, and Homeland Security has access to it. An aspect of the debate I'm interested in is protection for trade secrets. If I'm a businessman and I communicate with my business partners, this is protected as a trade secret, and I don't want foreign nations to spy on my business communication.
Well, yeah.
And the same also with travel data for business purposes. So what I experienced on the European level, because SWIFT is actually a non-governmental organization in Belgium, that there's in Europe no harmonized common business espionage protection law. So can this aspect also be addressed in this
area? I think the parallel with the SWIFT situation is it's exactly what we have. That as far as I understand, SWIFT transactions are also stored in, even if it's a Belgian company, are stored in the United States. And when you have the database on U.S. territory, it's U.S. law that applies. And then there is no regulation governing, or it's not comparable to the European legislation on privacy and data protection. So basically, what the financial institutions can do with this data is unlimited, or they can more or less do what they like. So the problem is twofold. It's not only that the government or the U.S. government has access to transaction to financial data, but maybe also private entities or agencies or companies can have access to the data, and this becomes increasingly problematic, of course. I don't know if the SWIFT situation is resolved, but I've heard a proposed solution to move this database back to Europe or have it in Switzerland, I think. So, I think at some level we have a classical technical or the classical problem that technical development goes much faster than legislation. So, what we really have to work on and come up with ideas is how to implement privacy legislation at the technical level so that we don't get this completely open repository of private data. And there is actually a way to do that. You can actually ask your travel agency or your airline for your PNR data, you have the right to know what they know about you. You have the right to correct the information that is wrong, and you can enforce this. It's a lot of work, but it can be done.
What about correcting this information? You said the record can't be deleted, and as in the proposal, this number 19 was a log of all changes should be part of the record. So if someone enters wrong information about me, and I request, please correct this, they will correct it, but the wrong information still is in the log.
Or, yes. That's a very good question. And I think the sign of the CRSs are they didn't think of that when they made them 40 years ago. So that is the fundamental problems like that must be addressed, and maybe you have to rebuild complete systems, and this will be really, really expensive. And the longer we wait for that, the more expensive it will get. And maybe the cheapest solution then is to get rid of privacy law. And of course, that would be a catastrophe.
Hello. Could you perhaps speak a short while on the mindset of these people taking these decisions that we basically can't understand? Do they accept these because they don't understand, or do they prioritize completely differently than what we do, or why is this happening?
No, I'm afraid I can't really. I only worked with the PNR proposal for hardly a month, so I haven't met the people behind it. But I think we have an increasing problem also with what you could actually call the surveillance industry, or companies that are providing services that are in the border between law enforcement and private companies. So, no, I can't really answer that question. No.
If you comment on that. Well, interestingly, it is all this surveillance laws are always brought on the road by Well, coalitions of social democrats and Christian democrats. Maybe you all voted for the wrong parties, I don't know.
I have a question. It seems to me that all this harmonizing of European law is always this opportunity for these evil forces to sort of seize power. And I want to know if there is any work being done in a proactive way. Is there something that we can do or that the EFF can do to for human rights or things
well,
like that?
The only proactive work I know, but it's not in this field, is the access to knowledge movement that kind of decided to set the agenda for WIPO. In this field, I don't know. I think unfortunately, we are just reacting to the bad things that are come out of Brussels, and it's like you have to put out fires, and we are not that many, so when you try, that's what you spend your time on. But it's also the upside, or you could say, I would say, like for example, IPRED 2, the Intellectual Property Enforcement Directive that introduces criminal sanctions at the European level. It has now kind of, we don't know exactly where it is in the process, but it has been slowed down, and I don't think it has even left the European Parliament yet in a formal way, It should, if the fast track that was planned for this directive would have been followed, it would have been passed in December already, 1 year ago, but it was delayed first by the rapporteur and then further delayed, and now not even the result of the first reading in the European Parliament has been consolidated. And this is thanks to groups like BEUC, European Consumer Organization, and Eblida, Libraries Organization, a couple of individuals that tried to take the effort to read all this stuff, all the papers, and get to know a bit about the process and how amendments are made and how they are tabled and voted and things like that. So it's not impossible to stop. I would that the political system we have is still open for influence. So if we use it, we can still do things.
Hi, I was just wondering if you could make some short comments on the new Lisbon Treaty. Is there something in there that we should be watching out for?
You mean the reform treaty, right? I don't think I can. What I know, it's not that different from what was rejected by France and Netherlands, and I've been following some mailing lists where some people have talked about the possibility for national parliaments to have more influence and this referendum principle that you have 1 million signatures or something. But it seems that they are not really well developed or really big structural changes that would make a democracy the tools or the system for making people more have influence over the political process is not that enhanced. I would say it seems that it's rather, it becomes more difficult now. And it's very simple things like voting rules, for example. So in the European Parliament, in the second reading, I think the previous treaty said the Parliament only needed a single majority. And then it was changed to absolute majority, which means that it becomes really, really difficult to reject a directive. And voting balances like that is like making things difficult or hard I think it's not opening up for a more participatory democracy I don't think so.
Hello. I have a question about the agreement between the European Union and the USA about the exchangement of the passenger name records. These passenger name records that are exchanged are just about flights from people going to the USA and from the USA, right? These passenger name records that are exchanged between the European Union and the USA are only about the flights that are going to the US and from the US. Am I right about that? Because I think there's a little confusion in the press about if there are any passenger name records exchanged or only those to the US.
So there's a difference between what the politicians think they can do with legislation. They say we only want to send this data to the United States. We want to use the push method, and we don't want to use this pull method. And that's just technically impossible, or really, really hard. You have to rebuild the whole system to have a push system. So the simple solution is just to give DHS root access to your partition in the CRS. And that means that you have Department of Homeland Security basically has real-time access for and can look at any flight for any European from Helsinki to Paris or from Rome to Prague. It doesn't really matter.
Okay, my passenger name record appears, I can be sure that my passenger name record appears in the US database even when I fly from Munich to Berlin or something. I can expect that.
I think you could expect that, yes. I mean, if you just look at the, you have to look at the technical, how does the system work? And we have so far very little understanding of how it really works. So what we can, how to understand it is to kind of get the data dumps and to decode or to reconstruct how they were made. So if you ask one airline for your PNR record, you will probably only get what that airline knows or what is in that partition. But the PNR record can be larger because other players can have been using the PNR record and they have access to it in another way. And I don't really know how that works. And within the travel industry, this is difficult to find out because it's internal education and trade secrets, whatever. So that's why I urge the tech community to debug and to look into these systems to see how they work. Okay. Because then we can have an informed discussion about what policy can do and not do, and the risks with institutionalizing or these passenger information units that will be some kind of departments, I don't know, what they really can do.
Okay. A few minutes ago, you said some comment that it might be cheaper to get rid of privacy at all. And I have a question, maybe more like an idea, that we need privacy just because there is the principle that every real human has only one identity. What if, besides getting rid of privacy, if we also get rid of that principle and allow anybody to have as many as identities as he can, then we don't need privacy anymore. What do you think about such solution?
So do you want me or myself to answer? No, I think it's really important to have fundamental discussions like that. I'm still fighting with understanding what the digital representation of my life really means to me, who I am here in the real world, and if I am in the whatever on the other side of the screen. So, indeed, there are deep philosophical problems that I don't think we have fully understood in such a way that we can express them in legislation in any simple way. And probably we are messing around with things when we do that we don't really understand yet. But I still think that the human rights principles, the charters we have are pretty stable, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it. No, don't. Anyway, I think they are still principles you should base your designs on. And I think to be one person is at the core of that design. But I think to have the new ideas to talk about them is really important, but maybe not in the current political problem with the PNR proposal, because it's concretely a text that's it's doing things. It will be it will be law if we don't do change it or stop it.
Okay, I have a question. I requested my travel records from the Department of Homeland Security, and I got my records, and I couldn't help but notice that the records did include my travel from Berlin to Prague last year after this Congress. And and I also noticed in the other people's records who requested records at the same time that the records also included land border crossings out of the U.S. And so my question is, do you believe that land border crossing information is also being exchanged or potentially being exchanged along with PNR records?
I guess so. I don't know. But I don't see currently any checks and balances in any of these systems, either on the private side or on the government side. I don't see strong political movement except for Christoph. For privacy protection and that transforms into legislation, you only see bad things happening, bad proposals coming, and they are being passed. That's the trend, and I don't see any strong counter forces. So I guess it's safe to assume the worst things are happening.
I would also add that my records also included information about my race, which I understand to be illegal in the collection of records, too.
I don't know how exactly what all the free text data fields you can enter. Maybe you can enter race there, too. Well, this means the last question has 5 seconds to... Okay, thank you very much, and study and do what you can. Write an email to the person you voted on. That's also always a first start if you don't want to get organized. So, yeah, voll Dampf voraus noch.